wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, a midweek show for us. We normally record at the weekend, but this is a Monday night, which means it's
beer.
A beer show.
It's a beer show. Well, not meaning about beer, but we'll have some beer. So for you, I have a Atlas, which is a DC brewery, Blood Orange Goza, which is like a tart type of thing. There's a decent chance you're going to hate it, but we'll figure it out.
Well, you did say, I asked for something, because I drive to the new basement studios, I did ask for something slightly lower in alcohol, and you were like, these are horrible, have one of these. So, if you are listening, and we probably shouldn't shout you out after that non-endorsement.
Yeah, well, Atlas makes a lot of good stuff, but I don't like that. Of course, I just don't like the blood orange flavor in there. I have a Unigov, Unigove, from Central State Brewery in, I believe it's in Indiana, and this is a farmhouse India Pale Ale.
It does sound very municipal.
Yeah.
Unigov.
Yeah. I
mean, you know.
Supposedly, these guys say, like, they do all their beers in, like, a somewhat sour farmhouse style, so even though it's an IPA, it's got some stuff in there to make it tart.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned it. It's not one of the things we're going to talk about, but I did just send you the other week, just out of interest, an article that I'd sort of seen online that there is a movement basically beginning out on the west coast of independent brewers looking to brew more English style ale. Which is why I sort of read the article. And one of the points they were making was, you know, traditionally, you know, a pint of English bitter is slightly lower in alcohol, so you can drink it more at different times of the day and whatever. And I just thought it was interesting, and they said that when you read the article that they are going about sort of attempting to, what's the word, sort of diffuse that, you know, that stereotype of warm British beer, and they'd had some success. And I wish I could remember now, because we weren't going to talk about this article, but I did look at their Facebook page and all this sort of thing, just to sort of see, and quite interesting.
Yeah,
some of the products that they're pushing.
The big thing they talk about, the name bitter being a problem, like the way you advertise your beer as a bitter.
People are like, people I don't want something bitter. Beer. Okay, so talking of you use the word tart, to describe my Blood Orange Goza. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I think that's
it?
Right. Okay. I always kind of mess it up, but
it's very tart. It's interesting. I don't find it overly offensive.
There you go.
So it's not the worst thing in the world. And in a strange way, the blood orange had prepped me for something far more
orangey.
Fruity.
Yeah. No, it's not too fruity, but it's just, for whatever reason, I'm not too into it. This stuff is pretty good. This is
it's tart rather than fruity for
something that builds an IPA, has a lot of hop smell, but not a lot of, and that's not really too overpowering in the drink.
And again, so this is the Atlas Blood Orange Goza, and my partner drinking
Central States Unigov.
Yes, central. Talking of centralized states, have you been watching any of the World Cup in Russia? We did a whole special.
I've been watching it from my house, not in Russia.
Oh, sorry. Dude, are you one of those people who watch it? Obviously, you know, there have been many articles about how most of the games, because it's not just Europe, it's Central Europe / Asia, that they really are at some pretty difficult times, especially if you were to live on the west coast.
Oh, during weekdays, for sure. Yeah.
Are you one of those? Do you open a window? You know,
I keep joking with everybody. You know, in our office, we have double monitors, and every time people are talking about it, I'm like, well, that's why we have two monitors, right? So I can watch the game on one and do my work on the other one. So I've watched, and I tend not to do that with the sound on. It's too distracting.
Yeah.
So it's half watching it there when it's on, and I tend to like watch what the scores are doing, and you know, I'm not watching everything for sure.
So okay, so because I now want to ask you something there. So you'll have the picture on, but you'll have the sound down,
right?
See, I'm the other way around.
Oh, but the announcers are so bad. How can you do
that? I'll open two windows, and I won't have the because if the picture's there, I'll just sit and look at the picture.
Okay,
but if I have the second window on the computer open with the sound, I can hear what's going on, and yet I've still got my work screen up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if I hear them screaming goal or whatever, I know to immediately tab to the other screen and see the replays and what have you. So it's an interesting difference.
I was actually driving. So my car is still, it's only had it for just 6 months. In fact, I just got an email talking about re-upping it. It comes with the data service so that you can get Wi-Fi in the car.
Okay.
And it's like included in the price of the car, and then they want to charge you some fortune to keep that up. So the other morning when I was driving into the game, I had the game on my phone in the car, like including video. Of course, I couldn't look at the video, but okay, I was listening to it. And thank goodness it was a better set of announcers, because I was like, okay, I think Warren Barton and somebody. But it was pretty decent to listen to that way. And then I've been watching it on my computer on our back porch in the morning while I have my coffee on the weekend. So
yeah, I don't want to pile on. The announcers have been of variable quality.
Yeah, it's like, just I don't know. They're a mixed bag for sure.
Foxified.
Staying with the studio.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. And I know it's the sort of people who...
Have you watched any of the All 22 view, or that's what they call it in football, is the end zone view, where it's just one big camera showing the whole field?
No.
It's pretty interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I find it, and again, it's interesting now, and we've had this discussion before about going to sports.
There's an alternate view that you can get streaming, by the way, on your phone or on a computer. And I threw it on my TV from my phone and was watching it, and it's a view from the end line. And it slightly pans up and down, but it's mostly showing you the whole width of the screen, so you can see everybody moving in all the different directions. It's pretty interesting.
Well, here's the interesting thing. I was going to say I don't do that because I've never run it through my TV, but if I were to run it through my TV, I would do that. But right. I find when you're watching on a computer...
It's too small.
It's too small, yeah. And you're like, I'm just not getting anything. But so I'm not against...
Maybe I'll show it to you on the TV before we go.
So yeah, no. I'm all for that. So anyway, the World Cup is on. If you have no idea what the World Cup is, go back and listen to our special where we ate Russian snack food, as well as showing you tidbits about Russia, which just kicks off with a quick article that we noticed.
Food related
and hamburger related, because we ourselves, a couple of summers ago, ranked the best in fast food burgers. Apparently, Burger King got into trouble because they had been running...
Meaning Russian Burger King.
Burger King. Burger Czar, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
That they got into trouble because they'd been running a promotion. Basically, if you were a Russian lady and you were impregnated by a World Cup star, whatever that meant, then you would be up for a lifetime supply of Burger King
Whoppers specifically, Whoppers, and also 3 million Russian rubles, which is $47,000.
Okay, so not that much.
You know, but it was on like something like Facebook, you know, or some sort of social network there, not like on TV or something, but they immediately pulled it after backlash, which is kind of funny. I just saw something about McDonald's or somebody running a promotion where they were using a woman who had been a victim of sexual assault and appeared on a talk show
So
maybe this is like the thing. Because basically they seem what seemed to be the indication is they always know this is offensive. They throw it out there and then they apologize. But meanwhile, they get a whole bunch of free publicity.
Well, this was the thing. There was a part of me thinking, and I find interesting... Because I'd actually stopped paying attention after the lifetime supply of Whoppers. The fact that I didn't know that
it was a cash prize. Oh, no, it's the same person. Never mind. Sorry, reading down. So this thing with the teenage sexual assault victim was also Burger King.
Okay.
So they have a tradition of these, like, really stupid ideas that maybe gets them publicity. Well, yeah,
that was what I was thinking. Like, they weren't legitimately running the competition.
Right.
Some guy just threw it out there, says, yeah, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
That gets all the attention. Rather than, hey, free Whoppers every time Russia scores. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Which is like, oh, another mundane.
And it's going to cost a lot more.
Slightly sort of carnival barker. But and considering, though, I didn't do enough research to know that, you know, how far behind are Burger King in Russia?
Who knows? I don't know.
I mean, I always feel, excuse me. That's the blood orange goes on the talking. I always feel in I was going to say foreign countries. When you go to Europe, when you go to England, for example, like when we had this discussion on the chicken show, KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, has a reputation. You know, it's name recognition across the world, and so I'm always wondering. You know, Burger King, Wendy's, which do exist in other countries, are they all completely squeezed out by McDonald's?
Yeah,
it's McDonald's, KFC, and that's your lot.
Could be. Who knows?
Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut do quite big. I know Pizza Hut's quite big I know it's quite big in the UK. I don't know about in Europe. So, I don't know if Burger King have to sort of make these big they're not an official sponsor of the World Cup, which McDonald's still are. Right. So
yeah, at that moment, you see all the ads on the tickers, McDelivery. They're talking about delivery in Russia.
And you are sort of getting crowded out a little bit. So I think you do have to sort of run
shake
with
it up, you know.
But yeah, I couldn't decide. I couldn't decide. Obviously, that if for a moment it was a legit competition, I was more curious as what do you evaluate as a World Cup star.
Right, right. It's not a World Cup player. It had to be.
That's what I'm saying. Does he have to?
There's some loopholes there.
What's the thing? Is he in one of the squads? Does the squad have to make it out of the group? Does he have to score? What constitutes a World Cup star?
Right, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go.
We'll never know.
We'll never know. No. But I must say, when I read that story, I did have a hankering for a Burger King burger. Yeah. So it worked.
Burger King and World Cup. So the next thing we had, with talking about shaking it up, was Gizmodo ran an article that, of course, you know, people are sometimes catching on to what we have warned the world about, which is the pending attacks from asteroids, excuse me, and how the world needs to be made safe. And Gizmodo has said, actually, that they're opening all these. We've long said that humans generally worry about the wrong asteroids, that, you know, we're out there scoping out these big asteroids that could end the entire Earth.
Right.
But we ought to be worried about the smaller ones that are going to devastate large amounts of population.
I'm not worried about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a
people know my position.
There's a little map that shows, like, if a small one, I forget how big it would be. Oh, if the same as the Tunguska event, which is from 1908 in Russia.
We discussed that on our own.
Landed in the New York City area, it would pretty much devastate all of the major boroughs of Manhattan and kill everybody there of New York City. Now, the odds of that happening seem to me to be fairly low. I mean, considering we haven't gotten hit by one at all, and the last time that one, the refrigerator-sized one or whatever it was, car-sized one that blew up over the air in Russia, there's a good chance it's going to hit Russia. Like, they have the most landmass,
right?
They
do,
You know, so they're going to probably be the most likely to hit, so maybe we don't need to worry about that, but you know,
surely Burger King can do a tie-in with that somehow.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I guess there is a report out.
If your village is hit by a meteorite,
working harder on the smaller asteroid tracking, which is all about, like, they call them NEOs, near Earth orbit objects,
and there's quite a lot of them.
Yeah. So they're trying to, like, get a full mapping of what they are, and so, you know, even at that, they can't exactly tell you what hit, but at least they know something might be coming close.
I don't want to argue with the scientists.
But you will.
But I've always been under the impression that the smaller asteroids, the smaller ones, well, Earth's atmosphere, that's sort of our defense blanket.
Right.
And they're going to take, they're either going to, those ones, when they're attacking, they're either going to get frazzled up by the atmosphere, or the atmosphere is going to take a whole lot off them. So, ultimately, I think they're meaning it really gets to
the ground. I assume they're saying, you know, something gets to the ground the size of a car or something like that, you know.
So, how big was the one that would how big was the one that would have taken out the five boroughs of New York? What do they define that in terms of
They don't
of size?
Have the information about...
They did. I saw the map, but we'll link the article.
Yeah, but it just says it's the same as the Tunguska event one. I don't know how big that was. Basically, the tracking, though, 2005 congressional mandate stated NASA would try to keep track of 90% of near-Earth objects larger than 460 feet. So we're talking about football field size and bigger type stuff. We're only a third of the way of getting track of those. I'm pretty sure that the one that blew up over the sky in Russia was like either refrigerator size, like a wash. Because I remember we were having a whole debate about the fact that it conveyed its weight as well.
Oh, the one that we all that everyone was taking their car cameras.
Their car
that one.
Something like that. And that one blew up. That didn't really, I think, hit the ground. I think it basically blew up in the atmosphere as it was coming down.
But it
injured like 1,000 people, but didn't kill them.
The White House did announce the other week that they wanted to start a Space Force. Space Force, yeah.
Here, everybody was cheering at his big campaign out there.
And that's great and all, but I really wish... I mean, we're way behind. We're throwing the dice every day with this.
Yeah,
when we've only tracking a third of these.
But maybe this is going to be part of Space Force's mission.
Around. What is Space Force going to do? You know, they're going to go up there and land on these things like Bruce Willis style. I mean, we need to be mapping. I'd rather have more satellite dishes and stuff.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I mean, like, we're going into an era when it's all supposed to be computers and drones. Why would we possibly have people in, like, little spacesuits shooting at each other like it's Moonraker?
But I'm going to be deadly serious right now. Let's say that we were tracking these asteroids and we did track one that could come and, you know, wipe out half of New York City, let's just say. So not a super one, not one where if you don't live up there, you have to worry. I'm not worried about them down here. But obviously, if I lived in the five boroughs, this would be of great concern to me. I know we've had the plan that you go up there and they inflate a bag and attach it to the bag. Remember we talked about that a couple of years ago? Well,
big nets and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, really, to me, it feels like there are things NASA could be doing, and we're not because we're worried about a Space Force.
Well, but listen, you know, what they can do, you know, it's going to take a long time to establish a Space Force. Maybe there'll be another president by then. He can retask them. It really has to be one where the people in his office must really roll their eyes when they hear about the Space Force.
I'd actually like a Space Peace Corps. That's really what we need to go up there and help things
the
like
aliens. Asteroids. Third world aliens that we don't know about yet.
Right.
All right. Other things in technological development. Goodyear is we won't have blimps anymore.
Which is a mistake.
Not meaning that it won't have things that fly, but they won't be blimps. They're switching to Zeppelins.
Yeah, the minute I saw that, when you sent me that article, and I'm like, this is a great idea, because for a couple of years now, there's a lot of different firms that have actually been, apparently Africa is a place where the companies that are in the industrial airship business think that it would be like, you know, Africa, the big Asian continents in terms of transporting food and stuff like that, where there's not a lot of infrastructure, that there are a number of large industrial airship companies that are firing up different prototypes, and that's where they believe the Zeppelin.
They're going to call it a blimp still. The blimp. Because everybody's going to get confused.
The blimp could actually be the blimp, and to a lesser extent, the drone, which we've talked about a lot on this show. They actually could really help countries that have a lack of transportation infrastructure. Well, I mean, you can cart all kinds of things around. Why are we building railways and big, you know, thingy or trucks?
Kind of similar to people saying, why would we put on hard phone lines? What we just need is a bunch of cell towers. Right.
And so, you know, I do know that the blimp industry, you know, maybe to the public eyes.
The blimp lobby?
No, I'm talking about to people at home, we just think of blimps as, football games and Goodyear.
Yeah.
But in fact, the blimp, I mean, it's...
It's got a life, potentially. So people would say, what's the difference? And there is a difference, actually. So blimps... Yeah.
Zeppelins have a horrible safety record. I mean, that's, we're going straight there. Sorry.
So, and Goodyear made its own blimps, and so they're this is part of an effort to get out of this business of making blimps, because I don't think there's a lot of money in making blimps.
No.
And
there are some blimp specialists.
Blimps effectively inflate. You know, like you fill it with the helium. A Zeppelin is actually a rigid airship in that it has ribs and stuff. It's like if you emptied all the helium, it doesn't collapse. It's the same shape it is. You're just filling all the space in there with helium.
Okay. I didn't know that.
They're made by a German company. It's more of a... If you look at it, you can tell the difference. It's kind of like a more of a bullet-shaped, sort of like skinnier and longer.
So is that the difference between an airship and a blimp?
Probably right. Yeah, because Zeppelin's a brand name. You know, it's the Zeppelin company.
Yeah.
And apparently, this says the most impressive part. This is in the Washington Post article by Andrew Van Dam. Says the most impressive part is Goodyear has undertaken the biggest U.S. airship pilot training since World War II. Because, like, apparently these, it's not just a simple case of switching over from blimps to this, and, like, even regular pilots have to get a ton of time to figure out how to deal with these things. Apparently holds a lot more. There's only 120 people qualified to fly airships in the United States, and only about 17 do it full-time, and 13 of them fly for Goodyear. There's a big thing about, like, how much bigger this one is. It holds a lot more people and apparently has much better restrooms.
Okay.
I guess they say the semi-rigid airships. I can't find it, but... Anyway, they don't make them with hydrogen anymore, so it doesn't blow up.
No, and I wanted to just backpedal a minute, and for those of you at home who perhaps aren't up to the technology, I would suggest you watch two different movies, so you can know the difference between a Zeppelin and the difference between a blimp.
Mm-hmm.
A Zeppelin, obviously, you can watch The Hindenburg, which is a 1970s movie that speculates that the Hindenburg blew up as an act of sabotage. It stars George C. Scott, and in classic 70s disaster movie fashion, all kinds of other, like, lower-level stars who are all on the Zeppelin, the Hindenburg, as it arrives in Lakehurst, New Jersey, and blows up. Very boring film for about 2 hours. And then, last 25 minutes, actually very exciting. And they meld newsreel footage and also, you know, stuntmen and stuff for the big climax. So that is a Zeppelin.
All right.
If you want to watch a movie that has a blimp, you obviously have to watch Black Sunday. Have you ever seen Black Sunday? It's based on a 70s book. Robert Shaw's in it, and it's about some European terrorists who enlist Bitter, ex-Vietnam Navy blimp pilot Bruce Dern, because he's angry that he's not in the Navy anymore and he can't get a job, and then he's flying doing ball games for Goodyear, but they're going to cut back because this is in the 70s, they're going to cut back. And he's angry because he doesn't get much of a pension from the government, all this kind of stuff. So it is social commentary on, you know, veterans and the VA. Anyway, they enlist him. And, of course, he's all gung-ho because he wants to stick it to Uncle Sam, who sent him away to Vietnam. And in the process, his wife left him and got shacked up with someone else. And what they want to do is attach basically an exploding bomb full of nails to the bottom of the Goodyear blimp as it flies over the Super Bowl in, like, 1976. And then, of course, so he needs to fly it. And because he's on duty that day doing the TV coverage, they're going to explode it and kill thousands, tens of thousands of people in the Orange Bowl. Robert Shaw is a Mossad agent. Not quite sure how he's involved because it's all like Euro terrorists and stuff like that, who joins up with the FBI to help thwart the plot. And the big climax is a helicopter. He gets on a helicopter and goes down on the tow rope and attaches it to the front of the blimp and tries to drag it out to sea after it's crashed in to the top of the Orange Bowl during the Super Bowl. Mm. Anyway, again, like the other Eshet movie, they combined real footage from the Super Bowl between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Dallas Cowboys. Exciting. Great movie. Great movie.
I'm sure it's not even available anywhere.
It's called Black Sunday. You see it on cable. I always watch it. Great movie.
Few more.
Very good book as well.
Few more stats. The current Goodyear blimp is...
Oh, sorry. One more bit of trivia. The book that Black Sunday is based on was written by Tom... Yeah, which was like a 70s thriller, pulp thriller book. Yeah. Well, it was written by Thomas Harris. He was famous because he was the guy who created Hannibal Lecter.
All right, then.
And wrote those books. Okay. Like Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, so I think he improved. I think that was a step up.
Yeah.
So anyway,
one is a Zeppelin, i.e. the Hindenburg. Black Sunday, that's a blimp. Watch those two movies and then you'll kind of know what we're talking about.
Goodyear blimp, 192 feet, top speed of 50 miles an hour. The new Goodyear blimp, meaning a Zeppelin, is 246 feet, so about 25% bigger, and 73 miles an hour, so about 50% faster. The big one is about the same size as a Boeing 747. The article also has a little thing about the USS Akron, which was a Navy airship in 1931 that is three times as long as any of them.
I mean, those things, I think people don't realize that those things back in the day, they were big.
Yeah.
Like, and again, to your point, they were designed with a metal frame, then the metal frame was filled with bags, so people would walk around inside. Yeah, like, yeah. I know we always think of the gondola underneath, but they're not. They're actually in it. But when one of those, I mean, you know, Hitler, he liked having his Zeppelins flying all over Europe because it was like a demonstration, like a very phallic demonstration of power when this big thing came.
I don't think they'd be very useful in warfare anymore.
Oh, no, useless.
Yeah, completely useless. 2 seconds. Yeah. All right, well.
Although I'm surprised, to be fair, that we've not started a blimp force. Because that'd be the way to demonstrate some power.
Another piece of technology news in, I guess that counts as technology, in The Post also, by Rachel Siegel, Uber wants a patent to tell if you drink and ride. So they have filed for a patent, which would basically be a system on your phone. I mean, like, you know, it's using the existing accelerometers and tilt and how the buttons are pressed, and it'd be a set of programs that could kind of deduce whether it thinks you're drunk. Well, what would it do with that? Presumably warn off drivers or like do other, you know, like making some judgments. Now, they have gone to pains to say, hey, we don't have any plans for this thing. We're just going to go ahead and grab this intellectual property, or at least they're not talking much about it. But, you know, Listen, if I need another excuse to go to Lyft, I got yet another excuse to go over to Lyft. I don't need Uber interpreting. I'm actually going to stick up. And, of course, people like worried that, you know, among other things, it'll encourage people not to call their ride, or also that it will be discriminatory towards people who have physical handicaps who might have the similar results. You know, somebody's got Parkinson's and they can't, like, manage the thing or
something.
When
I read the article, I took the position that most people take, like, this is Uber trying to get in everyone's business.
Yeah.
But the more I'm thinking about it, if I'm an Uber driver, this is probably not a bad idea. And let me explain why. Obviously, a great deal of Uber's business is driving around people who are drunk.
Yeah.
But to be fair, on Joe Uber driver, if he knows up front that I'm picking up Eric and Zeph and these two have been putting it away for the last 4 hours, it might not be a bad idea to have his emergency bin liner ready in the front and all that kind of stuff. Or if you end up having an incident in the car, I mean, what does Uber do right now if you drunk a bit much, you're a little worse for wear, you know, you do a bit, you soil yourself or throw up in the back of the car, and the dude's got to wash it the next day.
I don't know.
I mean, how does that work?
I mean, they've got your information, so, you know, they could certainly bill you, but I think most times, because the cars are privately owned by the individuals, it's up to them to decide what to do, and the last thing they want to do is make some waves and get downgraded.
So what I'm saying is, I suspect that this whole thing is a little bit of Uber attempting. Because remember, Uber have spent the last year, it feels like every week they are firefighting another story about bad malpractice, information disclosure, all kinds of stuff. Drivers complaining about working for Uber, all this sort of thing. I've noticed on TV at the moment, they're running quite an aggressive, drive for Uber and make a bit of extra money. As much as anything else, this is sort of a, you know, a little something for their drivers, like, hey, we've got your best interests at heart, keep working for us. Because at the end of the day, if Uber, I don't think, it doesn't matter to Uber if a lot of people are riding. I think it matters more to Uber that people are driving.
What? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
They don't care about how many drivers they got. They're going to replace them all with robots eventually.
Yeah, but until that time, They need the drivers.
They don't have a shortage of drivers. They got no problem there.
No, but I think their numbers are down a little bit until you just made a joke about it. But I think more people are going to work for Lyft.
Yeah.
Because Lyft doesn't... Well, that's what I'm saying. Lyft doesn't have that sort of...
One of the things is apparently the way it works... Apparently the way it works is it keeps track of the way you key in stuff and how you hold the phone normally. And then it compares that.
Ooh,
like,
I've got
so, like,
some that.
Point, oh, see, now suddenly that's.
Well, no, that's what, the devil's in the details.
Yeah.
I honestly don't have an issue. Put it this way, if I look to hail a cab and he sees me staggering about, he's got every right to flip off his light and just drive on off.
Yeah.
Because in his mind, he's thinking, I'm not dealing with that comedian.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, from an Uber perspective, I don't have a problem with them being afforded a similar... Courtesy is the wrong word. I don't know. I feel at some moment, you know, passengers still got to hold up, you know, their end of it.
Yeah.
But to me, the issue isn't so much that they want to help out Uber drivers. They want to help out drivers identify if passengers could be, you know, three sheets to the wind. But yeah, to your point, it is the method of doing that.
Yeah, right. They're gathering up this stuff. Like, who knew? It's bad enough that you're worried about, like, what Google's checking it. Now, I mean, like, you know, wouldn't surprise me if, like, a bunch of the Google phones already had this information about, like, how you typed in searches and, like, what should we, you know, like, what
is it? I'm a terrible phone typer anyway.
Yeah,
so I'm actually the perfect, I could beat the system.
Well, I can only
imagine. What you do is I need to...
I can only imagine, like, what you are with a couple of beers in you.
I need to create a third-party service where you have me hail your ride for you. Because I'm already in the system as a terrible typist, so they're never going to know. So
what
I'm saying,
that be your baseline?
Yes. My baseline is already incompetent, so if I've been drinking...
I'm sure there's subtle nuances of difference.
Yeah.
Anyway, creeps me out for sure.
Would it change? Okay, let me ask you a question. If they were, you kind of made a half comment about it, though. Would you seriously reconsider your use of Uber?
Yeah. I don't really, I mostly use Lyft. It's usually cheaper. The drivers are nicer. The cars are better.
Okay.
So I tend to use it more often anyway.
What's the difference in price? I have an Uber app on my phone.
I mean, it changes depending upon surges and stuff, but it's a couple of bucks usually, you know.
Okay.
Not more than 10% difference usually.
Is there any difference? So you have both. There's no other difference. You just sign up for the app.
Yes.
Submit your credit card stuff. There's no like monthly fee or anything.
No, same exact stuff. They're probably using the same software engineers underneath it all.
Because I do see a whole load of drivers that have both stickers in their car.
They can do either because they're supposed to be independent.
Independent contractors.
Until they decide to sue. So forget where I was going with that. Anyway, that takes care of Uber.
Okay. So that's Uber.
Next on the list, Star Wars.
Oh, a couple of articles doing the rounds. I sent you one this week, and I'm going to give you, I will concede the floor to you momentarily because you did see the movie Solo.
Yeah.
A couple of rumors are out there that, in fact, Disney were reevaluating what Star Wars movies were actually in development. Yeah, it was like
a report from a particular place, I forget where, but it was basically saying they were shelving all their little non-core store, like the cores being the triplet, you know, they're in the midst of, they got one more left in this set of three. They'd already have planned out another set of three. I think they were already mapping out a set of three beyond that,
right?
And other than that, they were going to pull back. And apparently, in addition to the Han Solo one that came out, there's definitely plans for a Boba Fett related
Boba one. Fett, because the director was James
Obi-Wan, there's a little bit speculation there because like there's some like YouTube videos get where somebody's cut together a Obi-Wan trailer, but it's not necessarily real.
The Boba Fett, I don't know. I'm not into Star Wars like you, so if you put like random pictures of characters up in front of me and put a name underneath them, if you change the names around, I wouldn't sit here and go, that's not Boba Fett, that's someone else. So I'm not all... The Boba Fett movie apparently did have a director attached. It was James Mangold, who directed Logan.
Uh-huh.
He'd written and directed Logan, and then the one before it with Hugh Jackman, which I think was just The Wolverine. The one set in Japan is very good.
Yeah.
And he's also done one of my favorite movies, Copland, and he did something else too. So he's a director of... I wouldn't say heft, but a director with a pretty decent resume who's done some stuff. And all the talk was that he had been involved to help write the Boba Fett movie and direct it.
Mm-hmm.
The Obi-Wan Kenobi movie, there's never been a director's name to it. The only quotes that everyone on the internet ever seems to run with is every now and again, they quote Ewan McGregor, who always says whenever he gets a chance, yeah, I'd love to be Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Stephen Daldry, the Oscar-nominated director between Billy Elliot and The Hours, is in early talks to direct and develop a script about Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Okay. So here's the thing, though, about this story. And I do believe that Disney Solo... I think it's done okay. It's made some money, you know, for a summer film. I think it's done all right. It's got pretty decent reviews. You saw it. You quite enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in reality, these are all, you know, apparently Solo cost a lot of money to make. I don't have those numbers, but the talk was it was a big budget production. I get it. Physically making one or two of these movies a year can really put pressure on a studio, just in terms of how it does business. So I am sure that they have said, someone is on record as saying, yeah, we're really going to look at how many of these we produce. But it doesn't cost nearly as much money to throw the Steven guy or James Mangold 5 to 6 figures and say, go away and write something, and if we like it.
Right.
But so I think there's loads of movies that are constantly at that stage because they're you know, it's somewhere beyond two guys sitting around going, here's an idea. It's somewhere between that and having a 150-page script and a cast of 20. There's got to be a gazillion movies that are all like a dude's written a 10-page treatment and someone's got it in his bottom drawer. I'm sure Disney are not shelving doing any of that because it's just ideas that you're banding around.
Yeah.
And again, what does it cost to pay you or I 50 grand to go ahead and put together an idea? But I do think Disney are probably thinking long and hard after Solo about writing a check for $750 million all the time to underwrite one of these things.
Right.
Because they're not cheap.
No. Well, that's what they have to do, is think about what they want to do. I mean, I thought it was very good. It was fun. It had parts that were clunky, that parts that were great. It really tried to do a lot. Like, it was just so many things packed into it where they were trying to tick so many different boxes. And I suspect what they're looking at this point is, well, they can't all be the same level. Like, they can't all be our super duper blockbusters. They gotta look at what, like, Marvel does and says, okay, my Iron Man and my, you know, the ones where everybody gets together, big ones, but, you know, they're doing their Ant-Man and their the other things with a lower budget and with a little bit more fun. And that was originally when I heard the story originally, was like gonna be small stories that were in there, like it might be the story of somebody on a planet and doesn't go anywhere and doesn't go to 18 different spots and do things. Now, the Rogue One was certainly more expansive than that, but it was it wasn't anything that we had any pre-built baggage into, because it didn't have to hit any other than, like, it was based on like a line about like the stealing of the Death Star plans, but they could kind of do what they wanted with it. Now, they ultimately knit in more parts of Star Wars because I think they had the opportunity to, but it was good for its own sake, whereas the Solo one was tougher, and a lot of people were cynical about the idea of backfilling a Solo story that nobody felt like, oh, I'm really dying to know where Han Solo came from, which is all the more reason. Like, I imagine what they're also evaluating is like, so Boba Fett, Obi-Wan Kenobi are both similar in that backfill nature, rather than going the Rogue One was a success with a kind of effectively a new story.
Yes.
Boba Fett, so you don't follow it, but Boba Fett's entire like claim to fame is he's a cool looking bounty hunter, right? Like, he never talks in the main movies. He ultimately, when they did the first three garbage movies.
What's he
movies,
famous for? Isn't he the bounty hunter that first catches Han? I mean, like, what's his connection? That's what I'm saying. I kind of
he's a bounty hunter. Like, and his in if you really get into the wonky part of it, he's technically the son of the main guy who was the source of the clone army. Like, everybody was clone version of this guy. His name was Jango Fett, and he was the dad. And Jango Fett gets killed by, I can't remember, it's Ewan McGregor or somebody else. And little Boba Fett as a child sees this, and so we're supposed to say,
that's the Quentin Tarantino movie, Jango Unfettered.
Yeah, right. And so he's supposed to end up being Boba Fett with his, you know, his angry demeanor. But he never really does anything in any of the main movies. He's just kind of a cool looking figurine to have when, you know, you collected all that stuff. He was one of the bounty hunters that was commissioned to go after Han Solo, and he's the one who catches him. There's not enough story there. Now, on the other hand, like, you know, could they fill it in? But, like, the thing is, it's already got its bookends to it. It's already kind of filled up, so why do that? So they'd be much better served with offshoots.
Well, this is the question I was going to ask you as far more of a Star Wars fan than I, and I'm going to say something now that hopefully you're going to correct me and prove my ignorance. I don't like it when there are these constant comparisons, and I get it if you're in the cinema and if you're in the movie industry, everyone wants to be the next Marvel comic universe. Yeah. But I've always said this, that inherently you can't match up to it. And the reason being is the Marvel universe exists around a whole back catalog of existing characters with existing stories in terms of the comics, and by extension, existing, sometimes independent fan bases. I mean, I know just talking to people, yeah, some people only read Spider-Man. I only read Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. So what I'm saying is, whereas Star Wars, you are mining the same set of fans.
Right.
And I understand, you're now, this is the point you're now going to correct me on, I'm sure. I do not think Star Wars, the narrative thing that it is, it doesn't have the same catalog.
No. I mean, Marvel's just think about
40 years
of comic books that they put out every week.
They
put
over there.
Yeah, yeah, and like they mix and match them. They cross them over. They reboot them. There's a lot more there. But I don't think most of the Marvel movies.
I'm not counting fan fiction.
I mean, I think the Marvel movies, like the plot, meaning the comic book movies, the plots of them, I don't think generally match up with the comics like the characters do, but they've reconfigured
them. No, but the characters
them.
Do.
I'm right, right. No, but I'm saying, but that's the point is they're, but that's also the point is they're taking off a back catalog of stuff of characters and they're saying, okay, let's put them together in a new way. Whereas the Star Wars stuff is so heavily tied to its Star Wars stuff that it's got to break away a little bit, which kind of is going to feed into our next article.
Well, but I'm going to say this about, but I'm going to challenge you a little bit there. Marvel, again, has, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 maybe not that, lead characters from, from, you know, Fantastic this to Incredible Hulk that. Each one of those has a small subset fan base.
I mean, they obviously heavily overlap.
Sure, they heavily overlap. But every time you bring a new character to the table, you're bringing a 5% of the audience who might not have been there before. Or or you're bringing in a new star who brings...
But remember...
Who brings the non-comic book reading...
Right, well, that's...
Talk about Ant-Man.
Okay, if you go to a Marvel movie, the average audience can't have more than 3% of the people who actually even read the comic books.
No, but they know the character that he's always... They have some familiarity with the character.
Do they?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
I mean... Like,
but in Star Wars, if you're not a Star Wars fan, you have no...
Yeah, but realize... But the thing is, there's way more Star Wars fans than there are Marvel comic book fans.
You think?
Yeah.
When think you about total it. Up all the subsets of, you know,
if you took
Avengers
our,
this and Fantastic Four.
If you took our generation coming up in the 70s, 80s, certainly 50% of kids in that generation were some degree of Star Wars fans. And I'm being conservative.
No, I understand that, but we're all
fans. There's no chance 50% were comic book fans.
Okay, but I still feel at some moment the source material is basically still one movie.
Well, that's the part I'm agreeing with, is that you have less, you're
not
stuck with particular things, which is why they need to break off and diverge. Like, so one of the other articles we just talked about very quickly beforehand is some story out there about a fan campaign to redo The Last Jedi, the most recent regular movie, where they've got something like 200 million in pledges, which
if you go to Twitter... Ryan Johnson, whatever he's called, he was very funny when someone threw it across him. He was very cute.
Said something like an ironic tweet of, you know. Like,
Seth Rogen, if you actually read his tweets, hilarious. He gets into a back and forth with one of the dudes, basically on Twitter, going, "What are you doing here?" So explain to me again who's paying for this. And like Seth Rogen has just gone to town having a Twitter conversation with one of the fellas who apparently is at the center of this. We're remaking, not recutting. Because when I originally saw the first article, I thought, so they're going to take the movie and re-edit it?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they're remaking it, apparently.
Yeah. Well, which, of course, they're not. But everything else says there's no, like, story as to what it would be or anything like that. So I'm sure that Seth is probably pissed off that they have pledges, and he's like, why aren't they pledging to a movie I want to make?
Yeah.
You know? That goes in with this story about the fanboys who were upset that... I haven't even really read much about this, about the upset that The Last Jedi didn't correctly track with the Force. Like, they're like, you know what they are? They're like Star Trek people. See, and this is why you saw the Star Trek people who insisted that you had to have all the facts right about how these technologies work.
Yes.
Whereas Star Wars is really a fantasy story that, like, you could be like, okay, yeah, I'm going to know this stuff, but, you know, whatever, the Force is the Force. Like, I can do the Force. It's kind of cool, you know? And it was when they did the crappy movies that they started to get into the technology type of thing, which made it worse. Well, what these people are saying is like, oh no, that's not the way the Force would work, and that's not the way this would happen. It's not the way the religion, quote unquote, was run. And I think that's it. See, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, but like in its heart, not its technological geekdom, which is what these people are sort of after, is something that's more accurate. Well, that's exactly what's holding back the Star Wars
fans
franchise.
Fans are the worst. And as a James Bond fan, there is always an argument when you go into a chat room, because you know there is a tiny subsect of the James Bond fan community, of which I am a proud, upstanding member.
Yeah. I don't know about upstanding, but...
Who want to believe... There's something called the code name theory. That the reason... There's a small sect of fans who believe that actually this is the way it is.
Uh-huh.
That there actually isn't someone called James Bond. James Bond is a code name that is given... In the same way that we think James Bond's number is 007.
Right. So there doesn't have to be continuity,
which
because
explains
it's different people.
Why it's all different dudes as the actor. Because really, it's the code name theory. And every now and again, someone from one of the films or one of the companies will, with tongue firmly in cheek, throw them a bone because they know it gets things started. But again, you can't argue with it. They're like some deranged cult. You can't argue with these people.
That's pretty good.
And that's what it is. But you're right. Star Trek fans are the worst for that. And you can't trust the fans. Unfortunately, you can't. It's interesting. Because again, I'm in a James Bond chat room. I want to shout out all the people at CommanderBond.net. Every now and again, I find myself typing. Just remember, there's a reason they don't like let us make the movies, because you can't trust the fans because they don't know what they're doing.
I thought you'd better say every now and then start typing, then you realize, what am I doing? And then you stop typing.
Oh, God,
you follow through.
I've upped my status again and everything. So, yeah, no, big fan of all the boys there at CommanderBun.net. I'll give you all a shout out.
Nice.
But, yeah, that's you can't do anything. And I think this is the thing with Star Wars in terms of becoming Marvel. Back to the core point about they've got to decide what they're going to make. You have to find that sweet spot that isn't catering to the fans, but is bringing the fans along.
Yeah.
But you also have to make new fans.
Yeah.
And one of my issues with the fact that they have to really decide when they get away from this whole the Skywalker thing. I don't know what the formula is. They have to risk it. I mean, again, to be fair, the Han Solo movie should have been a hit.
Yeah.
Should have been a bigger hit than Rogue One.
Again, I think the biggest reason it wasn't a hit was the promotions, the fact that they sort of talked about being bad. And again, what the heck were they doing in the middle of summer? They've been owning every holiday. They don't have another movie coming out till next year's Christmas time. So why they didn't just plant this one at Christmas time and say, like, oh, man, go to see this fun movie and, who knows, Star Wars, Christmas jokes or something like that in it, you know? So, well, anyway, that be that. Which, as long as we're talking about sci-fi things.
And fans.
Yeah. Last night was the last episode of this season of Westworld on HBO. And we're not going to
break it down for you.
We're not going to talk about I'm not going to talking about it, if that makes sense. But
spoilers anyway, just in case. Yeah. Just in case. We don't know if it's going to be spoilers, but let's just say it this way so no one can get angry for us for not saying.
I don't have any interest in plumbing the depths of the actual plot. But what you wanted to talk about, and you watched it this season after catching up, because you didn't watch the first season live, as it was being released.
I do watch it.
But the first season you caught up with, right? Like, you didn't watch it.
No, I did. I watched it when it came out, and I watched it on many occasions. The night of.
Okay.
And without
the first season or the second season?
The first season. Yeah. The second season I didn't, and this is what I wanted to get to about this show in particular. The second season, and again, we're not talking about the show, but the second season, it's very complicated to watch, and I found it easier to watch. The show airs on a Sunday in America, on a Monday in the UK. I found it easier to watch the show later in the week on a Wednesday and Thursday, not because of my personal schedule, because I could spend two days surfing the internet to prep me for what I was about to watch. So basically, and I'm famous for this. When a blockbuster movie comes out, if I'm unsure if I'm going to watch it or not, or even if I am going to watch it, the first day it comes out, I'll go to Wikipedia and read the plot. So I'll know. It's not a surprise to me if some dude dies at the end, because I've read on Wikipedia. Then so-and-so dies, but Luke jets away to safety. So I kind of know what's going to happen in these movies. But I wanted to know what happened in Westworld because it was quite complicated for me to watch. What I realized after watching the finale last night, Westworld has moved. Obviously, it's a TV show, but it's become this cottage industry of people talking about the TV show. And I found that quite unique. And I'm trying to think what else I watch, right? So, for example, in my household, we also watch Billions. Now, The Ringer, website that we've talked about, they do a Billions recap every Monday.
Yeah.
But you can't go to all over the internet and have people tell you what happened on Billions yesterday and analyze it. Same thing, there's a show, the replacement show for Billions on Showtime is The Affair. You can go to one website and they will tell you this is what happened last night. Entertainment Weekly is
there's
famous.
A bunch of places that just do straight recaps,
But Westworld seems to have created this whole.
Well, they're picking up what Lost did. I mean, Lost had this; they only had it in limited outlets. The internet wasn't as big a thing. You didn't have the Twitter thing, but the greatest thing ever was Doc Jensen on Entertainment Weekly. I don't think that's even his real name. Used to do analysis. Don't forget about recap. Lost of they're alluding to this. Look at this piece of art. This book that they have here. It's all about this and putting it into. It was very, very interesting.
Yeah,
and it made it a much more interesting viewing experience. Westworld's trying to do.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's being done.
And for that matter, the analysis people are trying to do, and I just find them so far behind that it's just
but the volume of it And I understand, yeah, yeah. And again, I didn't watch Lost, and obviously the internet was a different place, because Lost is what now, 15 years old, 20 years old?
No,
old
no,
is
not Lost? 20.
10, 10, 15 years old?
Yeah, something in that neighborhood.
All right,
yeah.
So even now, the internet is 10 years older and 10 years more sophisticated than it was 10 years ago. I am continually amazed at how much, you know, I told someone this today. I said, I feel like Westworld is the Donald Trump of TV shows. In the way that the Trump presidency doesn't really seem to do anything, but it's an awful lot of noise, and it wants to get you talking about it every day.
Yeah.
And there, every single news channel is constantly running Donald Trump this, Donald Trump that. And Trump was correct when he said, my presidency is going to get the best ratings. But he didn't really do anything,
yeah,
but everyone talks about it. I feel a little bit the same with Westworld. And again, I've been amazed the last couple of weeks how many different outlets are cashing in on... Clearly, people want to come to the... And I'm not a Game of Thrones fan. Is Game of Thrones the same thing? Which I personally think is a bigger TV show,
yeah,
in terms of base...
No, Game of Thrones got probably at least as much.
When you look at the ratings,
but the difference,
Game of Thrones ratings are twice what Westworld's are. Westworld's aren't actually...
Oh, yeah, no,
they're not very good.
No, no.
But I don't know...
The difference is, like, so the speculation around Game of Thrones is much more straightforward. Like, What I think happened with Westworld is the first season had some genuine mysteries, like little twists and things as you
very
went
clever,
along.
Very
and you
well
didn't
done.
Know what was
very
what
well
was
done.
Going on. And a bunch of people were, especially on Reddit, and that definitely wasn't a Reddit in Lost time, or at least wasn't a real thing that people did. Reddit's, of course, the mass message board that has this stuff. People started theorizing stuff about Westworld last year and getting it right, like getting like some twist they had like figured out ahead of time, and they weren't as hidden as you'd think they were, but they were there.
I mean, I called one of them out, right, and we too. And
so,
I don't know what I'm talking
right,
about.
Right. So I think this season they doubled down on that exercise. They're like, we're not just making a show, we're making a puzzle that people are gonna have to like guess at, and they're gonna speculate, and that'll get all this attention, blah, blah, blah. And it was really too much. Now,
this is what happens when you cater to your fans.
That's true.
That's true. Which was kind of my semi-serious, true serious point. Because to be entirely honest, I will cede the floor back to you in a moment. There's a part of me. Obviously, I'm not as thrilled with Westworld this year. I just find it too tough of a watch. And I'm quite a sophisticated TV viewer. I know I talk a good game, but yeah, actually, I'm not that stupid. I'm not sure I could watch it. I struggle. I got to the stage where I had to read everything, and then I could watch it.
Yeah, well,
I would know what's going on.
In particular, there's a timeline thing where they have multiple timelines going. And in the first season, they had two broadly different timelines, which you didn't totally know that the connection was until it came together. So they, like, again, doubled down on this exercise. And there's, I forget what, if you search for Westworld season 2 timeline, there is a chart explaining all of like all the different episodes and how the little things are slotted amongst this thing, and you would never know, be able to figure that out from looking at it with that. Well, obviously somebody could figure out from looking, but you wouldn't, as a casual viewer, you'd be like, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, and that's the thing. There's a part of me as a TV viewer, and it's not because I'm not sophisticated, and it's not because I don't want TV to make me think, but I'm like, if I've got to do all this prep work to watch the show, then why the heck am I watching the show? My dear old mum, bless her, it blew me away when I discovered that she watched Westworld.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I'm struggling to keep up. How on earth do you know what the heck is going on?
Yeah.
But she's
the other member of the house. So now the first season had enough of that mystery, but also had enough regular plot that you could watch it on those other levels. Like, so the other member of the Atlantic Boys household watched it and just enjoyed it for what it was.
Right.
You know.
But this new series, I don't think you can do that.
No. You'd be like, I have no idea what's going on here, because if you don't try to figure out the puzzle.
And I do suspect at a certain moment, this comes from wanting to cater. And again, I'm not having a go at fans, because I've said myself that I'm a fan of something. But, and again, maybe I'm linking something together that doesn't deserve to be linked together. You know, if we look at the decisions that Star Wars are making, maybe they should just make them more organically.
Right.
What I mean by that is, okay, so we're making these other movies, you know, with Finn and the girl, or is the girl Finn?
No,
Rey.
Rey's the girl.
Poe, whoever, the new robots. And if they decide, in the old days, you'd have a movie and you'd spin some characters off.
Yeah.
Right? Well, that's a bit more organic, at least. You've got something that was a big hit. Let's pull them off over here and give them their own TV show or their own TV series. You keep, because hey, this will keep the fans happy. the fans will come along on this. Maybe Star Wars needs to get back to that rather than sort of going back into the past and sort of plumbing, ooh, Boba Fett, or maybe this dude or whatever. I don't know. But it's the same with Westworld. Just tell a story and let all the industry roll along with you, and it will, the two things will work together and ultimately boost your product.
Well, I think some mystery is worthwhile because part of the thing is the mysterious parts of it. I suspect next
season...
But I still
feel it's too... But I still feel that it was catering. There are moments when the show is catering to this sort of... And I get it, this notion, and maybe every show's been like that, that notion of, you know, what we talk about, you know, what's water cooler conversation.
Yeah.
And in a strange way, well, I'm the one who's outdated because this is nothing more than water cooler conversation. It's just on the internet.
Right.
But I do feel there are websites and pods and...
Well, and the other thing, you know, like one part I don't think you can blame the show for in this regard is that's what the internet is now. Like that the other reason we have so much is because... Everybody, like every major, the fact that Vanity Fair is one of the main sources of like Westworld articles.
Yes,
it's crazy, right? Like
Vanity Fair. What? What are you doing?
Like what? Yeah. So, but that's just the changing.
Can we not have another Annie Leibovitz photo shoot?
That's the changing landscape of media in America.
Okay,
is that they need to come up with stuff that people want to hear like this, and so they get an article. You know, New York Times has got these things, and it's. Everybody's got it, so, you know, that's not really the show's fault. If you know, there were less outlets, then we wouldn't be talking about how much
but
stuff there is.
But don't you think the show is attempting to cater? But isn't the show...
Yeah, but they're not like, oh, I want to get 40 different newspapers to write a column on me. They just want to get somebody to write columns on
them. There's a part of me who feels a little bit that...
Watch what happens is when this ends... Those people are going to have to rotate into some other show. So everybody's going to gravitate to some other show they're going to talk about, whether that's the next time around Game of Thrones comes up or one of the new shows, like the new one with Rachel McAdams or whatever.
But I cannot believe...
Amy Adams.
But surely, if I'm a TV producer executive, am I now not doing my job properly if when you're coming into me to pitch me your idea about, look, I want to do this show for you, Zeph. I want you to put it on right. Zeph TV. And it's going to be about a private eye, but he's got a dog, and the dog is blind, but he's psychic. And, you know, this show is going to be amazing. And I'm going to get George Clooney in it, but he's going to be the voice of the dog, just like when he was on South Park, whatever it may be. I'm not doing my job properly as a TV executive if I'm sitting there and not thinking... Ooh, how can I make this play on Monday morning to get traffic?
100%. You would not be doing your job. Just the same as the variety shows and the SNLs realized we're getting half of our traction off of social media and people putting the clips on the YouTube and talking about them on Twitter and all those places. If you're putting a show out now, I mean, everything down to Roseanne, which all the trouble that they had, which was a traditional TV show, but was designed around the idea of having a social media wave of people who wanted to be nostalgic about it.
Yeah.
You know, and get some traction that way on the politics before they said, okay, that's a little bit too much there. You know, they're putting it out, supposed to put it out.
It's just called the O'Connors, apparently. Yeah.
Just Connors.
O'Connors. Are they O'Connors?
No, they're Connors.
Sorry, Connors. Sorry. Yeah. I apologize if I know you and your last name is O'Connor. Yeah, I'm not confusing you with
that. I think next season they'll dial it back only because they realize, you know, in the same sense of fan service, they know a certain number of those fans are like, what are we doing here, people? And they're going to dial it back, and it's going to be a more straightforward plot next year.
Yeah, because trying to keep the fans happy is a nightmare.
Yeah, you notice they knocked off a heck of a lot of people and eliminated a heck of a lot of characters. I mean, I think some of those are going to be still kicking around, but they eliminated a lot of people, and, you know.
Well, I know.
They're going to be out in the outside world now.
Well, I think this, but there's another reason why. Because now, also, to be fair, if I'm the TV executive, and I am now underwriting your show about the private eye with the psychic blind sidekick dog, and yeah, it's great that it gets all this Monday morning internet traffic, but hey, ratings dropped 20% from the week before. At some moment, I don't care about Monday morning. You need to turn out a show. Why am I paying for George Clooney when I'm only getting 750,000 people to watch this thing? I went in and tracked.
You realize HBO doesn't care about ratings. HBO cares about subscriptions.
No, but I did read somewhere but to be fair, I agree with you, but I think at a base level, Westworld's ratings had lowered in Game of Thrones, and they have lowered all the way through the season until last week when they peaked up again. And I do think, I did read a comment somewhere on the internet today, maybe in Vanity Fair or Rolling Stone, or it may have been someone who we've shouted at many times, Alan Sepinwall, who had said that this show in itself, HBO are taking a look at all their dramas that cost a heck of a lot of money, and Westworld costs a heck of a lot of money, and there's no quicker way to cut down on budget than start slicing off a few characters.
Right. So they'll simplify the story.
So yesterday, I don't think it was an accident yesterday that there is the potential, and of course Westworld being Westworld, where people can come back, there's the potential we can cut a whole load of salary right here, because we don't need her and we don't need him, and Anthony Hopkins, you've been great, but we don't need you anymore because you're costing us a fortune. Yeah. I do think there is that aspect about it, because at a certain level, yeah, it's great having everyone talking about, hey, yeah, the Atlantic Voice did another Westworld podcast. Yeah, but that's not making HBO a lot of money.
Well, but remember, again, see, their approach, like HBO, Netflix, their approach is something different. Like a TV show I want a TV show that's going to bring in ads, and like you can isolate the revenue from a given TV show. You can't isolate the revenue from a given show on HBO. They're more about like, listen, we want people talking about us like we're something unique. And whether people are tuning into this show, they're talking about Westworld. What's the Westworld's on HBO? It's this weird show. You got to check it out, kind of thing. And even if people don't ever watch it, it makes them that more likely to be like, "Ooh, I need to get HBO because I'm missing out on what's going on in the world and what's going on at the water cooler if I don't get HBO."
Yeah, I do agree with that. But at a certain moment, I can't believe there's any station. And while HBO sort of straddles this netherworld between. No, you're right. It's not broadcast TV or basic cable. But to be fair, it's also not Netflix. Netflix has never worked in a world where the matrix of its rating means something. But on HBO, at a certain level, yeah, the ratings don't mean as much as it does if you're CBS or the BBC or whoever in whatever country. But that rating number still means a little bit more than Netflix and Amazon, who can easily throw up their hands and say, hey, it's all about subscriptions, because they've never worked in a business where the ratings mean something.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. HBO, I mean, the only thing the ratings could mean is like the next time they re-up the cable companies, or they'd be able to demand it. Well, now they're owned by a company that's a cable company, so.
Yeah. I don't know. I found.
At least they were already. They're Time Warner, right? So Time Warner, AT&T, HBO.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So they're all part of that thing. Yeah. So now you're going to get it free on your phone, AT&T phone, I guess.
Oh God, I don't think I could watch Westworld on a small screen. I struggle to keep up on a big screen and with the captions
now
on and everything.
It's like a virtual reality.
Yeah, no,
thing.
I'm not having any. No, I just, like I said, I just the show did came you, to an end.
Speaking of Marvel, did you stick around and watch the post-credit scene?
Yes, I did. Because everyone had said on the internet, make sure you watch the thing. And I'm like, oh, thank
you. Oh, you didn't watch it live. You watched it sort of close to live.
I would say I was live. I just stopped to go to the toilet, so I was on 30 seconds behind. But I had done all my prep work, and I'd read on the internet, oh, and there's a post-credit scene. So I'm like, okay, let me sit through the credits. But I tend to do that anyway on shows, because I am one of those people who likes to see what's happening next week. I do like the little promo for next week's whatever.
Yeah, well, they weren't. So I did. No, I did, next week this week.
Yeah, I watched it all the way through to the end and didn't help me out.
It's the most confusing part of the whole thing.
Yeah, but again, whatever. Yeah. You know, he's heavy salary as well. So, I mean, so I do think, I just found it interesting that, and because it's the only show, again, I'm not a Game of Thrones guy, and maybe to talk a little bit about fans, because there's one other show that I do watch that apparently has been saved by the fans. There's a show called The Expanse that has been on Sci-Fi Channel here in the US, which is I think it's a basic cable station. Like, it's not premium. It comes with your basic package. And apparently, when they'd made the show, the deal they'd done with a production company was some deal from, like, 1975, where it was all about first watch ratings.
Mm.
And Sci-Fi, of all the stations, had completely missed the boat that this is not how people watch TV anymore. So they pulled the plug from the show. Everyone was up in arms. There was a big campaign. And so next season, which I think is season 4, what's his name? Amazon has said, yeah, I'll underwrite your show because I love the show, and it'll move to Amazon. And I don't know how I'm going to feel about it. It's going to be a test for me. It's a show. And to be fair, I'm one of the reasons why Sci-Fi had to bail in it, because I never watch it live. I would always DVR it and watch it and go through the commercials. So I didn't count in that basic rating number. I'm not sure I'm going to feel if Amazon do one of those series drops.
Oh, like hot ones.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to change.
Do you have Amazon Prime?
I do.
Other than the illicit ones?
No, I have Amazon. I have Amazon Prime, and I. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how I'm going to be about getting into that habit.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe it needs to drop so I can watch it. Because again, with what was the Top Gear redo on Amazon.com? What was their show? The Grand Tour.
Yeah, yeah.
And when their series came out, they did it. They only released one a week.
Yeah, yeah.
But after the first week, I'm like, yeah, I ain't remembering to go to my computer next Saturday watch this. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see.
But same as DVR. Another show worth, I watched one episode and I got some hopes for it, is called Cloak and Dagger, which is another Marvel comic based thing, but it's like two teenagers who like, not typical superheroes, and it's apparently supposed to be a little bit like a Friday Night Lights meets a Marvel comic thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's an interesting pitch.
Yeah. At least that's what Chris Ryan...
Tell the PI says. With the psychic dog to come back later. I want to meet these two.
Well, they're teens, you know, and so they're having like their like life, as well as finding out that they have some powers and that are somehow linked to each other, but they don't really like
but
each
they are superheroes. And what channel is that going to be on?
It's on Freeform, which I was like, what the heck is that? It used to be ABC Family.
Okay,
all right. And they changed it to Freeform.
All right.
You can watch it all streaming for free.
And your show, but I have noticed your show, the show that you talked up a couple of weeks ago, The Terror, that's been getting some good publicity.
That was great.
It's finished. And
yeah, it's done.
I've noticed it on a couple of best TV shows of the year lists on different
things. It was excellent.
Things,
so. You guys all missed the boat on that.
Oh, that's good. Missed the boat. Yeah. I'm sure some of those chaps wish they'd missed the boat too.
Yeah.
There you go. And I didn't even watch it.
Yeah.
I think that's it for this week, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep, this has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.